Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your Yarn and Circle, the Murray Grapevine. It is National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from your First Nation radio station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National News Radio Service, and you can give us a call and have your say and add to the conversation on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, you can text the brother, 045-714-0550, and also check out Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. They call it social media, so do get involved that way if you want to have your yarn, have your say, and be up to date in this world that we're living in at the moment, uncharted waters. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we're broadcast from and to all our traditional owners across the deadly country of ours. Welcome back to National Talk Black. We're going to jump straight in. We're going to talk to a beautiful Cassie Lang, Marawa Law, who's based in Brisbane and operating from home, I think. Working from home, obligation tips and tricks is our topic, so I'm believing she is at home. Cassie, good morning.
Good morning, Trev. How are you?
I'm well. You are at home?
I am at home.
Well, you can talk on this topic. You can talk on this topic. You are a professional in that field, operating from home, and the topic is working from home.
I have had a little bit of experience in working from home for the last couple of years.
There you go.
I can definitely talk about this topic.
Yeah, the laptop right near the washing up sink. Yeah, that's right.
Out on the lounge while I'm watching movies.
Shut your mouth. Leah's listening.
It's called multitasking, Trev.
Of course it is, and you girls can do anything. Look, a very important space. The world is upside down, but I always say it's not how you, what happens to you in life is how you respond to it, and we need to respond and not react, yes?
Yeah, we do. And I'm actually a little bit excited to see, you know, with all of businesses now, you know, transitioning to working from home, seeing what creativity and new ways of operating and, you know, actually come out of this, the new world as we know it.
So exactly.
It's interesting to see how businesses change, you know, whether or not they realise they don't actually need to necessarily have so much office space and that their teams can still be productive and produce more quality work and even probably generate a lot more creativity on the other side.
And when you're saying creativity, the other thing that comes to mind as well, because there's plenty of home businesses out there before COVID-19 came along. So people can be open-minded now to look into that sort of stuff, and then you can sort of look at another source of income. That's another opportunity.
I think it's just also that you get so much of your time back without having to commute. Like, it's probably
true.
Not as, you don't probably lose as much commute time in Cairns, but in Brisbane, just working from home, you know, you could almost get 3 hours a day back working from home. So even if, you know, businesses on the other side of this realise that they could probably allow more people to work from home, if not all the time, but, you know, a couple of days a week, that's, you know, that could be six or more hours a week that those people could focus on their fitness or their health or their family or, you know, picking up a new hobby that, you know, allows them to be creative and, you know, which then helps the business because they've, you know, got an outlet.
So, well, we're talking time. Time is money, isn't it?
Yes,
you know, I read once, Cassie, that 5 years of a person's lifespan is spent in a car. Going to work, going to football training, picking up the kids from school. There's a university degree, 5 years.
Yeah, that's it.
Exactly.
Definitely, you can have another degree.
There you go, fantastic. So our topic today, working from home, obligation tips and tricks. So start the conversation off in that space there, please, sis.
So I suppose, you know, we've seen businesses, you know, with these new COVID-19 requirements that the Prime Minister has said, where you can, please everybody work from home. So we thought this is a great time for us to open this discussion. It's obviously very topical, and there's obviously some legal things that people, you know, whether you're an employee or employer, you probably haven't turned your mind to as part of your COVID-19 response and transitioning everybody to work from home.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously having worked from home for the last 2 years, and that's part of, you know, given I'm in Brisbane and our head office is in Cairns, we even had to go through it as our Cairns office transitions all to working from home as well. So I was like, well, as we're going through, I imagine, you know, other businesses are going to be thinking about some of these things as well. So why not talk about it on BBM?
Exactly. What ongoing OH&S requirements apply to working from home?
So I suppose as an employer, and it's good to know as an employee that when you, even if you're working from home, there are still workplace OH&S requirements that apply. So your employer still has that duty of care to make sure where you're working at home is in a safe environment. So I don't know whether employers are, but I know a lot have been. It's when you are now transitioning to working from home, they should get you to sign like a working from home agreement. And that agreement should include a checklist, like going through what they would normally do if you were setting up. You know, they'd have an OH&S person come in to make sure your workplace is safe, you've got enough lighting, your chair's the right type of chair, you know, you've got enough room on a desk, you're not just working off your lap.
So we're talking the responsibility of the employee to make sure you've got a work safety environment, yes?
Yeah, you do.
Okay.
And it even goes into the point of, like, you know, it's your home, but because you're doing work there, you've got to have things like, you've got to have a smoke alarm, you've got to have either a fire extinguisher or a fire blanket, because it's a work environment and it's your employer's duty. So not many people would be thinking, oh, I actually need to have a fire blanket or a fire because not many people have them in their home. They may have something in the kitchen, but you've got to be able to access it easy from your workstation. So, you know, and making sure you've got proper lighting so that, you know, you don't damage your eyes any further, and making sure you've got correct support and set up with your laptop, your screen, kids, all of that stuff. It's all part of their duty as an employer.
So I suppose there's a responsibility then from both parties. If the employee says, look, can you work from home? And the employer says, yeah, well, I'm happy to do that and I'm keen to do that because I want to finish off my work, and still get paid, whatever the case may be, then the employee then needs to put in place the safety requirements, yes.
Yeah, so it might be, might go home and say, listen, I've got a little desk or I'm going to need to buy. So we had to get, because the amount of time we spend on screens looking at documents, we all had to make sure we had an extra, because I only have a little laptop which has a little screen. So making sure I had the right size screen at home so my eyes don't get tired and I don't get eye strain and I'm not leaning forward trying to read the screen. So little things like that. So if you need stuff to make sure you can do your job at home, whether you can take it home from the office if there's stuff there, or whether talk to your employer about asking buy extra supplies so that you can, you know, work from home safely.
Okay. And look, I never even thought of the in-depth part of that, but that is so very important. It is still a workplace and it is the employee's responsibility, isn't it?
It is. It is the employer's responsibility to make sure you're safe. And, you know, and that you can, you've got all the needs, all the tools that you have, you know, to do your job properly and safely.
All right, fantastic. Now, what about the fun part? What tips and tricks to help with the cabin fever, so to speak? Can you let us know about that space?
So I suppose one of the most important things that I have found over the years working from home is getting yourself into a routine. Like, I know there's going to be big changes to family life at the moment, given, you know, what's going on with the current restrictions. But making sure you can get yourself into a routine is important. So, you know, you hear on the radio and everyone is still talking about the importance for us to be moving. So whether or not you can get up in the morning and, you know, even with the kids, if you've got kids at home, going for a family walk just so you can be out of the house for a little bit.
Sure.
You know, get some exercise. But then it's all about, you know, making sure that you're doing things. Like if you're in your, trying to have a dedicated space at home, so that when you're in that space, you know, whether it's either if you've got us lucky enough to have a spare room, that's your office.
Okay.
Or if you're using one end of the table, that's your office. So that when you're in that space, everybody knows you're working, you know.
So it's communicating with your family as well, you know.
Communicating with your family as well, saying, if I'm sitting in this room and I'm sitting at this end of the table, this just means I'm in my work office, I'm in work time, so I need some time to do that. But it also means that when you, it's important to take breaks. So, you know, making sure you get up and move, have regular breaks to eat, you know, and then whether or not you can go do a couple of hours and then go have a break, you know, have your lunch breaks if you, because, you know, kids are on school holidays now, so
sure.
Whether or not you can be going, we all sit down as a family and have morning tea together, lunch together, afternoon tea together, so that you still can spend time with them, and then they know that not to interrupt you during those other times, like helping set boundaries amongst the family as well.
Well, exactly. I mean, you can have the novelty of having lunch in the cubby house at the backyard.
That's right. You could go out and have a picnic if you wanted to in the front yard or the backyard, or just, you know, do something a little bit fun. But leaving the workspace to have your break. So when you're in your workspace, you're working and then come away, so that you don't try not to blur, you know, too much of your time. Otherwise, your work then comes all around the house with you, and then it, I find it's not as productive.
And look, it is a bit of a juggle, isn't it? And, you know, for both parents to be working from home and doing the home thing as well as doing the job thing, the work thing, anxiety, depression, you know, all four walls closing in on you. So let's talk about that space as well and how we can help our mob out there.
So there is, there has been a lot of stuff in the media about, you know, given these trying times and, you know, changes and, you know, people losing their jobs. So definitely anxiety and depression is definitely coming up. So there are good resources available, like, you know, Beyond Blue, the Black Dog Institute, Health Direct, and then you've also got Lifeline. There's also, you know, there's a number of apps like Headspace, and other ones that you can, you know, put on in the morning to help, you know, just meditate and just, I think there's even some radio stations down here in Brisbane, like Mainstream Rivers, do like, if you listen to them, they do like a deep breath, you know, three deep breaths for a couple of minutes.
Breathing exercises.
A couple of hours. Breathing exercises.
Mm-hmm.
But just making sure everybody, you know, it's good because everybody is aware of these things and trying to encourage people to know there are places you can go if you feel like you are struggling.
Yes.
And even if it's things like, if it's not, you're getting anxious because of finances, there are places you can go where they can help negotiate, you know, loans.
Payment repayments, exactly.
Payments, yeah. So
exactly.
Don't be afraid to ask for help right now. There are so many things and people that are offering help.
Yes.
If you need it, put your hand up and help. There are so many people who are willing and volunteering their time to make sure we all pull through this together.
Exactly. And you did mention Lifeline. I'd like to mention the phone numbers and crisis support, 131114. So all our listeners out there, if you feel as though all four walls are closing in, look, make a phone call, and the support and the help is there for you.
Yes.
Oh, very important.
If you're an Indigenous business and you need some, we are offering some pro bono support. To
you are, yes.
If you've got some legal issues you're not too sure how to deal with, give us a call on 4041 3088, and we can help you work through some of your issues and give you that support. We're actually partnering with some of the big firms here in Brisbane to also, you know, help us with that support. So
beautiful.
There is, like I said, lots of people are coming together to make sure we pull through this.
Fantastic. Yes, uncharted waters, and we need to get it together. And look, that's what Murra Law is doing. I thank you very much, Cassie Lang. Let the mob know who Murra Law is.
So Murra Law is the nation's leading independent Indigenous legal firm. We specialise in commercial and Indigenous land law, and you can check us out and get all our contact details at our website, which is murralaw.com.au.
Too deadly. Cassie Lang, you take care of yourself. Stay safe, my sister, and love there to you and your deadly family, my sister.
Yes, you stay safe too,
Trev. All right,
bye-bye.
Bye. Too deadly. Beautiful. Yeah, I'm Cassie Lang from Murra Law, and giving us the tips and tricks, so to speak, and regarding operating doing work from home. That's what we're talking about just then. Working from home, obligation, tips and tricks, and also the work health and safety part of it as well, which was never even thought of, but that's so very true. It's great to see that employees are supporting employers working from home, but also the employees need to have the responsibility to make sure it's a work, the health and safety place for the people to be working, doing their job at home. So need to engage in that, have a conversation with your employee if that is the case. Make sure the communication is all open. Also communicate as well with your family. That's very important. And let them know that when you're working, have a routine as such, as Cassie mentioned, and have your time off to be with your family and have lunch, what he said, picnic at the front or at the backyard or at the cubby house, that sort of stuff, but then go back to work and let let the family know when work time is happening. That's what it's all about. All right, Jamob, add to the conversation. National Talk Black, that deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yeah, and with the ball you run, Trevor Tim, 20, Trevor Murray from the Curry, going live from the First Nation radio station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbaribrip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go via NERS, National Digital Radio Service. That number again, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, text me, 045-714-0550. And otherwise, check us out on Facebook as well, BBM 987 FM. Now, COVID-19, don't forget you, Mob, Australian Government's National COVID-19 Helpline, 1-800-020-080. So if you're needing help or queries or questions or what have you, support there. That number again, 1-800-020-080, Australian Government's National COVID-19 Helpline. Stay tuned, BBM 98.7 FM, National Talk Black. Yothi Indy with Mabo here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, you mob, give the Murray a call, 1-800-422-416. The Murray is the bully one, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev. Murray from the Curry, I'm live at the First Station radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbaribrip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go via NERS, National Radio Service, for your daily program, National Talk Black. So have your say, 1-800-422-416. All right, now check your smoke alarm day, a timely reminder as Aussies bunker down at home. We're talking about your fire alarms, very important, and especially after just talking to Cassie Lang from Murra Law, talking about all the deadly people out there who are still working and working from home. Employees and need to be looking after their employees and making sure that we work health and safety. And smoke alarm was mentioned in that conversation. So there you go. And we're now about to catch up with Cameron Brooks, CEO of Brooks, and talk about, well, first of all, who is Brooks? On the line, Cameron, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thanks.
Where are you calling from, Cameron?
Sydney.
Sydney, thank you. So Brooks is your company, is that right?
Yes, mate. Yeah, my father founded it, but yeah, I've been running it for a bit.
And your father's name is?
Peter Brooks.
Okay, Peter Brooks. Thank you. Cameron, so tell us about Brooks, your organisation there, your company there, please, mate.
Well, we do fire detection systems. We smoke alarms for residential applications is obviously what we're probably going to talk about in a second, but we also do bigger fire detection systems for commercial and industrial applications as well.
Okay, how long have you been in business for, Cameron?
45 years, if you ask the old man.
Fantastic. And so you've taken the reins. Is Dad still at the table, or?
You know, he was still going into the office at the age of 81.
Dad, I got this.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, yeah. Can't hold a good man down. So how are you operating? How are you going? In this space that we're working in at the moment, this world we're living in, upside down, here we are, COVID-19 in our face. Tell us how you're travelling.
Well, we supply products for essential building services, so, you know, things are still moving along. The governments are still spending money making sure that their people are protected. So we're not, you know, we've had a bit of a downturn, obviously, like everyone has, but people still need smoke alarms. They still need smoke detection systems in bigger buildings. So it ticks along.
Well, it's a matter of life and death. It's very important. So during this this time, especially about self-isolation, we need to adhere to the rules and for safety of your family and yourself about the smoke alarms. Let's go into that about home alarms.
Now's a good time to you know, with most people at home or working from home and kids not at school. I know it's school holidays in some parts of Australia now, but it's, you know, you've got more people plugging chargers and what have you into PowerPoints and loading up the sockets, so that the risk of fire is only, you know, slightly greater, but with everyone home, the consequences could be much, much greater.
Okay, so smoke alarms are the most important measures in place to protect the family home. Are people are jumping on board? Are you having much communication with homeowners?
Yes and no. There's been a lot of extra hits on the website, but I'm not sure that the Australian public's all over the point of smoke alarms, really. You know, I think typically in Australia we think she'll be right, mate.
Lackadaisy.
Sort of so, yeah. Just stick them up on the roof, and we don't want to hear from them until we need to hear from them. And that's good, but you've got to do a couple of things just to make sure that they're working.
Sure. And, I mean, you're not doing house calls, are you?
No, we're really just a product distributor, and we sell to... So a Sparky will come and put in a mains-powered alarm or... You know, a security company or one of those sort of things. So we really just on sell to the next channel, which is all the installers and integrators.
Your smoke alarm day, that's a day of reminding us all about as we bunker down at home, and because of the environment we live in at the moment. Yes.
Yep. The point of it is to check your smoke alarm day is to do exactly that. Hit the test button. Every smoke alarm, whether battery powered or mains powered or this or that, all have a test button. And if you push the test button and it goes into alarm and makes the noise that we all don't want to hear, then you know it's working properly. It'll reset itself.
Okay.
And then you know it's gonna be okay if and when the time comes. And also, you know, you get that peace of mind.
Exactly. So just to test that, just to let our listeners know again, you can test it by just pressing that button. Is that right?
Yeah. Every brand's a little bit different.
Okay.
But they all have a test button. That's required by the Australian standard.
Okay.
So, and they should say test button on them as well. And you just press it down for a second or two, and then it'll go into full alarm. Maybe put some earplugs in before you do it.
Okay, radio, heads up.
And you don't have to get it. You don't have to get on a stepladder or a chair. You can use a broom handle.
Okay, right. Yeah. And you press it, it goes off. And when it goes off, it'll reset itself. But that just shows you that your smoke alarm is working.
That's right.
Fantastic. That's right. Well, it's very important information. And like you said, a lot of us, while we're all isolated, we're all at home with our families. All our sockets are being used and doubling up regarding charging the iPhones and the iPads. Yeah. So, look, very important now to be aware. And it is smoke alarm day. So there's the reminder, my friend.
Yes, mate. Yes, it is important, and as long as everyone sort of starts getting it, but we suggest that you should do it once a month. Now, Australians are flat out doing it once a year, so once a month might be kidding ourselves. But you know, if you do it a couple of times a year, then you're further ahead than you were.
Cameron, we're having this conversation, which is very important. I mean, like, we tend to forget about that. We're focused on entertaining the kids and keeping them alert and what have you, but there it is, another thought process. Your mind can have one thought at one time. The fact that we've talked about this, it's now in the forefront of people's minds. So thanks for the conversation, my brother.
No worries, mate.
All the best to you, Cameron. You take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. Thanks. That's Cameron Brooks there from Brooks. That's his family business, and he works with alarms, smoke alarms, as well as other stuff. And he works from home there in Sydney. But your smoke alarm day, that's what we're talking about. Check your smoke alarm day. That's upon us. And so it's a timely reminder that all us mob, we need to check our alarm. So as he mentioned, just press it up the top for the safety button. Press it and just hear that beep. And he says probably have headphones in while you're doing it, earplugs in, whatever. And then when that goes off, goes for a couple of seconds. And if it does go off, then it shows that it's all good and it's operating. But if it's not, then you need to attend to it. Very important, your mob. Have your say. Yarn up strong. Add to the conversation. National Talk Black. That deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. We're housed at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National News Radio Service. And that deadly number again, 1-800-422-416. 422416. Otherwise, text the brother 045-714-0550 or Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. If you check out our Facebook page, you see all the photos and all the yarns we're having and pictures of the people we're having yarning too, as well as my big face there. Fine-looking face. Have a look at that. Two Deadly Mob. Stay tuned to your daily program, BBM 98.7 FM. Warrumpy Band here on your daily program, National Talk Black. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Call that number, yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev. Murray from the Curry, live from your First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go via NERS, National News Radio Service. In the world that we're living in at the moment, you mob, yep, COVID-19. For you mob out there, Australian Government's National Helpline, COVID-19, 1-800-020-080. If you have anything going on in your household, with your family, with your mob, call that number if you want any questions answered in regarding the COVID-19 helpline, 1-800-020-080. Okay, Yana with Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, National Talk Back. Now, the Monash Experts 2020 Olympics Games in Tokyo postponed, and we're going to talk to senior lecturer in the Department of Economics, Monash Business School, and that's Dr. Ross Booth, got him on the line. Dr. Ross, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. And look, here we are in the 21st century, and COVID-19 is upon us, has really turned the world upside down. We've been talking about, talking to all the professionals in regarding the virus and doctors and psychologists and how it's all affecting us. But the monetary situation, especially with sports, and Olympics is a big sport since day dot, it's been like postponed for 2021. Tell us what effect that could have on the economy and how big the games are, please.
Well, I think it was kind of inevitable that the games would be postponed or cancelled, but I think the idea to postpone the 1 year is a good thing, of the sort of next best outcome, because one of the hard things is to find another time for it, because you get the danger of crowding out, say next year, crowding out some other sporting competitions
that might
have their world championships or whatever.
Well, because it's booked 4 years in advance, isn't it?
That's right, yes, and a lot of planning, and they've got to be at a time, well, preferable in a time where you can maximise the television audience in the US, for example.
Mm.
So you don't want it clashing with their major sports leagues, hockey and football, basketball and baseball.
Sure.
But you've got, so the basic story on these large mega events on the economy is there's no real net economic benefit. It's just simply a transfer of what people do. For example, so the Japanese, if they Japanese, well, let's take tourists for a start. So
okay.
Sports tourism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that sports tourism will be deferred until next year, so there's no change there. But one of the arguments is that typically what happens with these bigger mega events is that a lot of the locals don't want to be around when the games are on, so they get out of Japan, or they leave.
Well, they turn into business, don't they? They hire out their house or their units, what have you.
That's right.
Yes.
So they leave, and it displaces tourists. So people who aren't interested in the Olympics that might have gone to Japan at any time steer clear of it. So you're getting sort of sports tourists as opposed to ordinary tourists.
Mm.
And moreover, these, particularly the Olympic tourists, because it's going to be so congested and so forth, they might not like sport. They leave Tokyo or even leave Japan, so you get a displacement. The other thing that can happen is that, a lot of locals, so that's the tourist side of thing, but the locals, well, if they're buying tickets to go and watch the games, then they're not spending on other aspects of the Japanese economy. They're not buying a new car, or they're not buying a new dress, or going to a restaurant.
Sure.
Because they're buying tickets. So the net economic benefits aren't that large.
No, but the ramification of the postpone, in a way, snowball effect, partner punt.
Well, yeah, but you also get, I guess, you get some double costs of staging. So there would have been a lot of planning going up until the events now of staging, ticketing and so forth. So that will all have to be repeated. So there's extra costs involved in the games. So one other thing I think economists like to talk about, but it's often sort of forgotten, and that is these big events have what we call in economics a public good effect. It's like a good feeling effect. So, for example, take the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games. Now, I didn't buy a ticket. I didn't go up there. But I watched it on free-to-air television. So I didn't actually outlay any money, which contributed to the Commonwealth Games, but I had a good experience. I liked watching the events.
Entertainment.
Good that they went well. That's right. So there's always that public good aspect. It was very hard to measure. So it's not to say we shouldn't have these games, and it's like saying the Victorian government subsidising the Formula One Grand Prix. Yes, they're putting money in. It's commercial and comps. You don't know how much they spend, or a bit of a guesstimate, but there are certain people feel good that the GP is there and it's run, and they sort of take an interest in it. So it's the same kind of idea. So even though there's no major net economic benefit, I guess Japan's interested in exposing ourselves to the world in terms of, you know, the economy is out of a stagnant period. They were in for a long time. We can do things well. A lot of the infrastructure is already there, already built, and so it's less costly in that sort of sense. It's an advanced economy which perhaps can afford any expenditure on the games, unlike, say, a developing economy. I guess one of the major cost falls on the athletes who now have spent all that time. They might have cut down their work or spent a lot more time.
And look, time could be running out for the older athletes as well. This could be their last chance.
Well, it could be, yeah. That 1 year could make all the difference.
Or yeah, make or break.
You're just having one more shot at it, and then think, well, another year of bit of pain and arthritis and sore muscles.
There you go, that's right.
I know how they feel.
So there you go, yeah. Singing to the choir here.
That's right. So I've got to go through all that. You know, it's like, you know, when you're doing football training in the olden days, say, okay, you've got to finish off, you've got to run eight laps, you know, under 50 seconds or something, and you do.
Old football players don't want to go through the pre-training, you know.
That's right. You get to that. You finish that eighth lap. You think, oh,
why am I here? Mate, what am I doing?
Now do one more, and you just can't do one more because you've mentally you've worked up.
Put for the eight laps. Like, don't give me 10 laps. Right. Surprise that's attack.
Like those athletes training. You know, can they go? Can they help sacrifice all that time and away from their family and the sacrificing the income, perhaps?
Exactly. So, Dr. Ross, senior lecturer in the Department of Economics, Monash Business School. What previous Olympics have been cancelled, and what were the economics effects on that when that happened?
Oh, it's good. Look, London were given the, not only London were getting them in 1940, I'm not quite sure of the dates, but London were given the games in 1948 because they were going to host the games during World War II, and also Helsinki were going to have the games, and they were given them in 1952. So they were the times when the only times, well, maybe there was once in World War One when they were cancelled too. It's unusual for them. Well, only during World Wars have they been cancelled.
Yeah, exactly.
The city that missed out gets another go at them. Typically.
Well, we are living in a war at the moment, but the enemy is invisible, isn't it?
It's a different kind of war, true. Yeah, and let's hope that in a year's time that it's right to go ahead. We don't know how long this whole COVID-19 is going to go on, and would it be? Yeah. Well, if you think about it, would you be willing to put your money up front, buy a flight, buy a hotel accommodation?
Exactly, exactly. So the scare factor steps into play, doesn't it?
That's right, for athletes and for spectators too. And will the travel bans be all over by then, or will there limbering COVID-19 effect still, and we've still got to be careful? It's a bit of an unknown, but let's hope by next year we're sort of back to normality,
exactly, you know.
Yeah.
And if they do postpone it again 21, then it's hard for them. They'll just more or less have to wait for the next one, which is supposed to be 4 years from today, 24, is that right?
Yeah, that'd be right, 2024, which is might be Paris, I think. It's getting pretty close, isn't it? And then you're clashing with Asian Games and the Commonwealth Games and the other World Championships. It gets very hard to find another time, but it's worth a lot of money in the IOC.
Well, of course, and people are thinking, why are we talking about sports? But sports is a powerful tool in the economy in regarding economics, also for health, for entertainment, all the above. So it's very important, isn't it?
Oh, it is, and I think, you're probably a rugby league fan being up there in Cairns, which you're missing the NRL.
I don't want to talk about it, Doctor. I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, don't go. Well, I'm missing the AFL. And
well, there you go. So the unknown world we're living in at the moment, but talking about the Olympics has been postponed to 2021. Watch this space, but hopefully...
July the 23rd, the opening ceremony, July the 23rd, so I've marked it down, my diary.
Mark it down, put in your diary, and whatever you got on, cancel it, and be ready to be a part of the Olympics in 2021.
Enjoy, yes.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Nice talking to you. All the best to you. You stay safe. All the best to you and your family.
Thank you, and to you too, and your listeners. Bye.
Bye-bye. So Dr. Ross Booth, and senior lecturer in the Department of Economic Monash Business School, and we're talking about the Monash, we're talking about the 2020 Olympics Games, the Olympic Games has been postponed in Tokyo for 2021, but we're talking about the effect on what it does to the economy and the impact, so to speak, and that was a very important yarn there, and talk about recently when the last time the Olympic has been cancelled, and it was because of war, and that was the last time it was cancelled. And like you said, we are in a war at the moment regarding this pandemic upon us, COVID-19, but the enemy is invisible. So you need to do your bit, your mob, to stay safe, look after yourself, and be careful. He says, staying at home, don't need to leave home, then stay at home. If you do travel out, two people at a time,
including yourself, 1.5 metres away from other people, constantly wash your hands, cough into your elbow, and if you're using tissue, discard it, and need to stay safe and keep informed by calling the Australia's Government National COVID-19 Helpline, 1-800-020-080, and also be careful what you read on Facebook and all that sort of stuff on social media. Hear it from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Have your say. Yarn Up Strong here on National Talk Black. We've got about 15 minutes on the program. 1-800-422-416. Want to hear what you're going to say. Trendy Trev on the mic, your host for the daily program, National Talk Black. We're live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM, and we go via NERS, National News Radio Service. Too deadly.
My name's Raven and you're listening to Talk Black on BBM 98.7 FM.
In My Kitchen by The Titters here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Give this Murray call. Let's have a yarn. 1-800-422-416. The Murray is the bally one. Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev. Live from the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. BBM Bumper Brip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go via NERS, National News Radio Service. Going to catch up now with Tony Gibbs back on the line. Good morning, my brother.
Yeah, good morning, Trev. I'm a bit keen this week. It's 3 days in a row I've been on there, and I wanted to clarify a couple of things because it's really difficult. You're not a health professional, and they can say I'm not either. But
I'm a doctor of happiness. That's all I am, brother. A doctor of happiness.
Yeah, well, that's what I've got to be. You know, this is part of the job. You've got to
exactly.
Yeah, I've got to keep somebody happy. Mm. I wanted to clarify a couple of things, mate. I was talking about how people can give wrong combinations of drugs and illness and things. Mm. I'll try and make you laugh. Mm. One of my first jobs was a chemist boy, eh?
A chemist boy?
Yeah, pharmacist. When I was 14, mate, after school in Burwood in Sydney, I used to go down there to the chemist at 4 o'clock and I'd wash all the little glass bottles they had out there before plastic.
Where was this taking place? Where was this? Sorry, Tony?
In Burwood in Sydney.
Burwood in Sydney, okay, yep.
Yeah, I worked from Rex Foy, the chemist there, a long time ago.
Okay.
And I used to go there after school and it was a little job. I used to do newspapers in the morning down at Burwood Station, and in the afternoon I had a chemist boy job. And
gee, a little workaholic, brother, a little entrepreneur.
Yeah, mate, I wanted to work. I was fresh in the country and I wanted some money in my pocket. I was just a kid, you know, and I couldn't go to school. It was too hard for me to adapt. And I left school when I was 14. My first real job was in Woolies on the cigarette counter when I was 14.
Yes.
But anyway, before they had this chemist job, and they used to load me up with all the prescriptions, and I had this little bike with a basket on the front, and they put all the prescriptions and bags in there, and I was a drug peddler, mate. I used to peddle up and take all the drugs up to the old people's houses, you know, and the old folks' homes around the place.
Yeah, good, good. Yep. A drug peddler. True as it sounds.
Happy to see me.
All excited when they've seen you peddling down the road on your bike. Drug boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a drug peddler, mate. I was on this little push bike with a little front wheel and a basket. I remember somebody said, "You're always happy to see me." And I said, "Yeah, we don't. You're going to get run over."
Too funny.
Yeah, because people depend on the medication, you know. So
exactly.
I learned that very early on, a number of them too. A few other things. Why I've been talking is because we've had a discussion. We hear a lot of people talking after funerals when things go wrong, and they complain about treatment. And everything I say, I've talked to Donna, and she's happy that I talk, because there's satisfaction in her, because she's had a long history of 20 years. You know, I used to report how I took her to Townsville Hospital, drove her there 20 times, you know, come out of the river through floods and Christ knows what to get there and back. Never missed an appointment.
So you are Donna's carer, aren't you?
I am Donna's carer now. After that call a couple of weeks ago, I got a message from Centrelink that my claim has been processed, and they'll send me a letter. And I'm not worried about that, but it's just, I was trying to get her an air conditioner in the car, but it's cooling down there and it's not number one on the list. But the point is, 20 years ago, I took Donna to Cairns Hospital with the advice of Mossman Hospital to take her there. She had stomach pain, and I took her there.
Well, were you living in Mossman at the time, were you?
We was doing opening up an art gallery up in Mount Malloy that eventually got a check by them rednecks up in the town there, the attack on the Adinsey Art Gallery. I broadcast that years ago. Our life has been one of chaos. So, but just before this happened, and she wanted to get a truck and go back to Goldsville, you know.
Go home.
Back in the home area, you know, this is what we were doing. But it was in there. On the last frontier to Cape York there, Mount Lawler, and that was a terrible thing from which we never really recovered and stuff, but anyway, you go on. But I went to Mossman Hospital, and they said, go to Cairns Base, and they said, oh, there's nothing wrong with this woman, take her home. Yeah, I'm talking about racism in the hospital 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I know we're now, but we have to go back to the beginning to clarify what our anger. And they said, take her home. She had severe pain. And I said, no, I'm not taking this woman from the hospital. Mossman Hospital said, bring her here after an ultrasound. And it's about, I've heard before on the radio, people don't diagnose things quick enough. Anyway, they said, take her away. And I said, no. And then they eventually got other people down. We had a sort of practice stay in the hospital. And so they took her in and gave her emergency surgery. And they removed what they called all her baby hairs, you know, pull her hysterectomy and everything. And then she was in the ward, and she had all the stitches and stuff and tubes and everything. And then this old nurse came in with a pen and was poking her with a pen, poking her and lecturing on giving up smoking. And she's really just out of surgery, you know. She wasn't smoking in the ward, of course. And so Donna up and left. She disconnected herself and got into the old truck. We just got the.
Because she didn't like how she was being treated.
She didn't like how she was being treated, mate, and I should scream down the wall, what are you doing to her? You know, I just come in, I've been out for a smoke again, my bad habit. And I come in and I just called her. And so Donna disconnected herself, so she jumped in the truck. I was amazed. I thought, oh, no, it's got all this shit.
And this is 20 years ago, wasn't it?
This is 20 years ago,
yep,
mate.
Yep.
And so we went up. I'm really happy to have the time to say this properly for once, too, and I'll get it through quick because I know time's running short. And then we went up to Lake Chinneroo on a table land and camped there with the stitches for 10 days, which is a bit of a nightmare in itself. And then a local doctor took the stitches out. After that, she always had problems. And we wanted a second opinion. We went down to Mater Hospital and got a second opinion. And they said that Cairns base precipitated the damage, you know, disturbed her bladder at the time, which is where the cancer's come from. And there was an operation that she could have had called a diverticulum to remove a little pocket. It's like on a pool table, you get them pockets the bull is going to. It's a little pocket on the bladder and water collecting it. And it's like the water doesn't go through the body, it collects in this pocket like stagnant, like a backwater, and causes the infections. They could have simply removed that instead of sending her to Townsville 20 times for steroid injections. She says to me she's tired of being a guinea pig. And our anger goes back 20 years that they did not do the right thing. It's second class. Back for the last.
And now you're living with the physical situation from those decisions back then, of course.
From those decisions, mate, it's been 20 years of it, and I just want to clarify that it's no good waiting for people to wait too long to complain.
Yeah, act on it.
And it's really difficult to go into an hospital and talk to them, because if you say something, then you're arguing with the health professional. You know?
Sure, exactly. I mean, virtually what they're saying is, don't tell me about the human anatomy. I'm a doctor, what have you. Well, don't tell anything about my body. I know my body is what your argument is.
Yeah, you're right, mate. You've got to have a bit of paper. You don't like anything, mate. I'm an Australian too. But I don't have a bit of paper, so I'm Australian. I didn't have a bit of paper for this and that, but I've done all kinds of things without a bit of paper. And it's your knowledge and plain common sense, you know, that if you can do the job, you do it, and that's why I'm a carer. And that's why I'm caring. And I just want people to know that Donna is an embarrassment to that hospital, because it goes back so far, and I won't let it rest. And that's why, you know, I know they shouldn't have taken the coronavirus into the hospital, because that puts all the patients in risk. They could put them in the airport or somewhere, but they're putting everybody in that hospital's lives at risk, you know, and getting cancer patients.
Sure.
They'll give you any excuse why we're cutting the surgery, and you can't argue them, because they're health professionals. Well, I was a health professional when a kid once, you know, and they were glad to see me delivering it, medicine. I don't care. I do care. I'm the caretaker, and we were the caretakers in Goldsboro. And I'm still a caretaker, and there's all kind of ways to take care, so everybody take care of one another. And I'm just happy to had the time to say that this problem originated in Cairns Base. And Donna told me afterwards it was a student that operated on her then.
20-odd years ago. Look, I thank you for your very important conversation there, and thank you for sharing. I've got to go to the news, Tony, but all the best and love to Donna, and thank you for sharing, my friend.
Thanks, mate. I'll go quiet for a bit now. I just wanted to get that out.
Too deadly. Thank you, brother. That's our Tony Gibbs, regular caller here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Murray, going to sign off. Thank you very much for your company. I'm back in the hot seat again next week, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, 24/7, text the brother, 0457-140-550. BBM 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National Radio Service. But I want to thank you for your time. For your local mob, stay tuned. I'm going to continue the program with the special COVID-19 and taking you right through to 1 o'clock. Stay tuned. Too deadly.
Chat a little more among our family more. You'll know while I'll put my dumb more kind. In a little more kali, oh, the more on you got long to yet. Teasing a wrong eater, Alin, Monatali Lam. Kamaraman ng ngutya mamiri malam.